At this time when we remember the great Protestant Reformation in the month of October, it is particularly important that we remember and recognize that after the Protestant Reformation, there was a great movement that begun within the Roman Catholic Church called the Counter-Reformation. An effort to counteract all that was gained by the Protestant Reformation. And so it's always important for us to recognize the day in which we live, to know what's going on religiously, to be able to be like the sons of Issachar and be able to understand the signs of the times. And we know that ecumenism, and we identified it this morning, is still alive and well in the world. I was just mentioning in the announcements tonight a magazine that I picked up this week called Redeeming the Time. It's put together by some brethren in the Faith Presbytery of the Bible Presbyterian Church. The lead story in this particular issue for the fall of 2021 is a question for evangelicals: what fellowship hath righteousness with unrighteousness? There is a photograph on the front of a Dr. Thomas Schiermacher, who is the Secretary General of the World Evangelical Alliance, along with Pope Francis. There's another photograph linked to the same article inside the magazine, in which you have pictured Dr. Schiermacher and Dr. Tunnicliffe, also of the World Evangelical Alliance, joining with several prominent prosperity gospel and charismatic televangelists during an audience with Pope Francis several years ago. And among those televangelists are Kenneth Copeland and James Robison. Now, what's significant about that article is that the Presbyterian Church in America, that is the PCA, the Africa Evangelical Presbyterian Church, the AEPC, the Presbyterian Church of Brazil, PCB, and other, quote, Reformed and, quote, Evangelical churches are members of the World Evangelical Alliance and are thus complicit in these entanglements with apostasy and unbelief. So if you are a member of the PCA, your church is involved with this kind of ecumenical compromise. Now you might say, well, I don't have anything to do with that. I don't agree with any of that. But I'm just telling you that your denomination is involved in that. When it comes to the PCA, I should also say that it is very much a mixed bag. A mixed bag of conservative men and men who are not so conservative theologically. And not so very long ago, one who describes himself as a same-sex attracted minister was ordained to the PCA ministry. There are moves abroad within the PCA to have women ordained as elders and to be allowed to be ministers. And at one of their assemblies not so many years ago, I understand that there was a vote that was really quite close on that matter. And there are other issues, and I'm just mentioning that one denomination as an example of the kind of compromise that is taking place now, today, in terms of religious ecumenism. I was also interested to find that within this magazine, there is an article on the World Council of Churches' attack on North America. Now, you know as well as I do that there is a real assault upon the history of the United States in schools, in seminaries, in universities, and in political life. We have got people who are telling us that we ought to be ashamed of America and its history, that we ought to be bowing our heads in shame and apologizing even for the history of this great nation. The World Council of Churches is complicit in that. You know, there are people who don't want any borders. They want open borders to allow anybody at all to come into the country. The World Council of Churches, in a recent news release, said, quote, "In North America, can borders become shared spaces even amid racism and division?" And it went on to say, one of their spokespersons, that borders, actual borders in our nation, are wrong. Hard borders are wrong. Rather, they should be shared spaces. The same person who said this, Archbishop MacDonald, described the US-Canada border as a wound and not a border for Indigenous peoples. There's a picture in this article of a group called the Pilgrim Team. They are official representatives of the World Council of Churches, and this is right up to date, 2021, fighting the Dakota Access Pipeline, including being involved in protests and public events. There is a photo here that is somewhat dated, from about 5 years ago. But just this year, the Pilgrim Team was sent again to protest in North Dakota. And they take up all sorts of causes, such as so-called racism, such as the LGBT cause, and various social action that they're involved in. The World Council of Churches is up to its neck in that. So for anybody to try to tell you that ecumenism is an old issue, this is something from generations ago. It's not really anything that's relevant any longer. It really is not something to be concerned with. Those people are not telling the truth. Just one more example of the poisonous influence of ecumenism, even in my home country. Northern Ireland, you may or may not know, is 100 years old this year. This is the centenary of the founding of Northern Ireland. In 2021, there was a tripartite agreement that was lodged with the League of Nations that allowed Northern Ireland, that northeastern part of Ireland, to remain under British rule along with England, Wales and Scotland, and allowed the rest of Ireland to secede. It became the Irish Free State and later became known as the Republic of Ireland, or ERA, to give it its Gaelic name. The terrorist campaign in Northern Ireland that I lived through my entire life was geared toward forcing Great Britain to abandon Northern Ireland and to allow Ireland as a whole to be, quote, reunited, though I could give you many reasons why Ireland was never, ever united. But I happen to know from experience that the Roman Catholic Church was up to its neck in support for IRA terrorism through the decades of the Troubles, so-called. There was a hunger strike some years ago in which 10 IRA members, or INLA members, same Republican organization, fasted, starved themselves to death in a political cause. At the height of that starvation campaign in the H blocks of Her Majesty's prison there at the Maze, blessed crucifixes were sent to each of those terrorists in their cells from the Pope himself and delivered by one of his men. Every IRA terrorist who has died in Northern Ireland, when he's been shot by the police or by the army on what was called active service, every one of them has been buried with the full rites of the Catholic Church. Every one of them. Some of the priests have spoken up in favour of the IRA and their nefarious activities through the generations. And yet, Protestant churchmen from the Anglican Church, from the Presbyterian Church in Ireland, and from the Methodist Church in Ireland have cozied up to these Roman Catholic priests and bishops for generations. Just the other day, there was to be a service, a religious service. It actually was held in the Anglican Cathedral in Armagh City, in County Armagh. Her Majesty the Queen was invited to come. She was unable to come because of some security concerns and health issues. Boris Johnson, the British Prime Minister, was there. Various other political dignitaries, heads of state and so on. All the main churches were there. The Free Presbyterian Church was not there, praise God. But all the other mainline churches were represented, including the Roman Catholic Church. Now think of this. This was a service being held to celebrate the 100th anniversary of the founding of Northern Ireland as a state. You know what the Roman Catholic Archbishop did? He stood up at that service and said that the partition of Ireland and the formation of Northern Ireland was a tragedy, that it was a matter of regret to him, that it had caused nothing but hurt and division among our people. Now, can you imagine? You're going to have a celebration on the 4th of July for the independence of the United States, and some person gets up at that service and says, what a pity it was that America ever seceded from Great Britain. What do you think the attitude of people would be to that? Not one ecumenical minister that I know of said anything against that. You know why? Because they're complicit in it. The reason that Northern Ireland finds itself in the position that it is in today is not least because of the complicity of ecumenical clergymen in what has happened even politically in our country. I remember when I was much younger, secret talks were held at a place called Fecal in the south of Ireland between the IRA terrorists and leaders of the mainline religious denominations and the ecumenical movement. Now, I say all of that just to let you know that ecumenism is a threat, not just religiously, but it's actually a threat also to freedom. It's a threat to many of the things that we hold dear as lovers of freedom, but especially and particularly as Christians. Now tonight I want to talk about the outcome of ecumenical evangelism, because this is the one area that is particularly in view when we deal with the subject, should Bible believers join hands with charismatics, mainline denominations and Catholics to preach the gospel and or address human suffering? Should we be hand in hand with these people in their wokeism, in their various causes that they fight for, their social justice activism? Should we be as Christians involved with that? And particularly should we be involved with such people in preaching the gospel? Well, let us think about ecumenical evangelism and the dangers inherent in such activity. There's a verse that we ought to think about in our own individual personal lives, but it also applies to church life and to religious affiliation. 1 Corinthians 15, verse 33. 1 Corinthians 15, 33. Be not deceived. Evil communications corrupt good manners. Let me say that again. Evil communications corrupt good manners. In layman's terms, in modern parlance, that means it's not a good thing to keep bad company. Because when you get into bad company, it has a bad effect upon you. Evil communications, fellowship with evil, will corrupt good manners. David could say in the Psalms, I am a companion of all them that fear thee and of them that keep thy precepts. And that's the way it should be for every child of God. The Old Testament abounds with examples of the curse that comes upon those who join affinity with the ungodly. We have read tonight about one Jehoshaphat and his joining affinity with the wicked Ahab. The wicked Ahab who was married to an idolatress. A woman who brought idolatry right to the forefront in Israel. And yet Jehoshaphat, who was a true believer, said to Ahab, I am as thou art, my people as thy people, and we will be with thee in the war. And what Jehoshaphat said that day was a total lie. Ahab was nothing like Jehoshaphat. And his people certainly were not like Jehoshaphat's people. But here's a man who had gotten involved in evil communications. And it had now corrupted good manners. Good men have often had their lives ruined by foolish alliances. The late Mr. John Ashbrook, author of the New Neutralism 2, Exposing the Grey of Compromise, said this, compromise takes a man farther than he intends to go. That's a really good statement. Compromise takes a man farther than he intends to go. And when I think of that, I think about Dr. Billy Graham and how his ecumenical relationships affected him. Now, I know that people today will say, well, Billy Graham's an old issue. That's an issue from decades ago. Why would we even worry about Billy Graham or even talk about Billy Graham? But I'll tell you why. Because all that Billy Graham did, we are still living with the effects of to this day. He has paved the way for all manner of displays of ecumenical evangelism. In the January 1978 issue of McCall's magazine, there was an interview with Billy Graham by one James Michael Beam. And Billy Graham admitted a change in his own thinking over the years. Listen to this. Quote, I am far more tolerant of other kinds of Christians than I once was. My contact with Catholic, Lutheran, and other leaders, people far removed from my own Southern Baptist tradition, has helped me, hopefully, to move in the right direction. I have found that my beliefs are essentially the same as those of Orthodox Roman Catholics, for instance. They believe in the virgin birth, and so do I. Well, actually, Billy, the Church of Rome's view of the virgin birth is not the same as ours. Because the Church of Rome teaches that Jesus derives his holiness and his purity from his mother, who they also teach was virgin born. Did you know that? They teach that Mary was born of a virgin. And hence the Lord Jesus Christ derives his purity and holiness from her. But I go on. Billy Graham says of Romanists, they believe in the resurrection of Jesus and the coming judgment of God, and so do I. We only differ on some matters of later church tradition. Unquote. Really? We only differ on some matters of late tradition. Like what? Priestly absolution for your sins? Confession in the ear of a priest in a box? Prayers for the dead? Purgatory? The worship of Mary? Saying so many Hail Marys compared to the Our Fathers and the Rosary? Really, Billy? You only differ with the Church of Rome on some matters of later church tradition? You don't differ with them on the Mass? You don't differ with the Roman Catholic Church on transubstantiation and its view that was articulated by one Alphonsus de Liguori in his book that's a handbook for every Roman Catholic priest to study, which says, and I'm saying this almost verbatim. Were a piece of the consecrated wafer to fall onto the church floor and were to be consumed by a church mouse, God would be present in the belly of that creature. My friends, that's blasphemy of the worst kind. But that's the teaching of Romanism. Billy didn't see any problem with it. Now you examine the ministry of Billy Graham and you will see a worsening compromise through the years of his ministry. I have nowhere near enough time to deal with that. Dr. Paisley wrote a book that was published by Bob Jones University Press, which I don't think would be published by the same organization today, entitled Billy Graham and the Church of Rome. And it lists all of the egregious examples of Rome's association with Graham, his meetings with the Pope, his friendship with Cardinal Fulton Sheen, and various other Roman Catholic bishops and cardinals. It got worse through the years, Graham's compromise. And of course there are some evangelicals, doubtless like him, who imagine that their compromises might provide opportunities for them to witness for Christ, even to the extent of winning those infidels and Romanists that they labour alongside. Billy Graham's idea was, I'll allow liberals, theological liberals, onto my platforms at my crusades. I'll encourage them to bring their people from their churches. I'll allow Roman Catholics to be involved as counsellors. As long as I can get all these people from those churches to come to the crusades, and I can get them saved. In other words, let us do evil that good may come. Now, even if that kind of activity was successful, which in the vast majority of cases it is not, it doesn't change the fact that God forbids it. You know what the Bible says about those who say, let us do evil that good may come, whose damnation is just. Those Bible believers who have been involved in the pro-life movement, such as my friend, Pastor Ralph Overdahl of Wisconsin, can testify to the influence that the Church of Rome has had and still has over that entire movement. I have a book that Ralph wrote that he gave to me. I wish that book was now available in print. It's no longer in print. However, it can be obtained on a PDF file in PDF form. If you go onto the internet to search for More Than These by Ralph Overdahl, More Than These. And there is a site there. You can find it. And if you don't, I'll try to find it for you, where there's a PDF file that you can download. You talk about getting your eyes opened. It is a history of how the pro-life movement has advanced the cause of the Roman Catholic Church, and it's replete with sad examples of people who mistakenly felt that it was legitimate to join with Romanists in the crusade to save the unborn. Now, let's be clear. Saving the lives of the unborn is a very laudable thing to do. I'm totally opposed to abortion. 100% opposed to it. And Brother Ralph Overdahl went to prison many, many times because of his involvement with Operation Rescue, with his involvement in going to abortion mills and doing things that he will now tell you upon reflection he probably shouldn't have done. He spent a lot of time in jail cells alongside priests and other Roman Catholics and Protestants who were put in jail because of their actions and activities outside of abortion clinics, trying to stop girls from having abortions, trying to block the way of people who were going to perform these things, and so on. And of course that was a good cause, as they were acting within the laws of the time, and sometimes not so much. But while acting in a good cause, the welfare of the unborn, people have jeopardized the witness of the gospel and led countless souls into the bondage of Romanism. Pastor Overdahl stopped ministering alongside Roman Catholic representatives standing with their statues of the Madonna, standing there repeating the rosary outside abortion mills, because he was being hindered from evangelizing those people. And when he tried to talk to those Roman Catholics about the gospel, he was shunned and pilloried and told to be quiet. And Pastor Ovidal gives many, many examples in his book, more than these, of how the pro-life movement has been an effective tool in the hands of the Roman Catholic Church leadership in their drive to desensitize the average Christian to Rome's heresies, idolatry, and blasphemy. And just check it out. Those who marched to Washington in those women's marches against abortion, who are the speakers on the platforms? Who are those that appear on Fox News and on other outlets to represent the pro-life position? Usually people like so-called Father Frank Pavone of Priests for Life and others like him. Now, is it a good thing to try to stop abortion? Yes, of course it is. But how can it be a good thing to support and to promote Roman Catholicism while you're doing so? Because that's what they do. Catholic and Christian people, Roman Catholic priests and evangelical pastors, praying together, worshipping together, and yoked in ministry together, all to save the unborn. Now, saving the unborn is a laudable objective, but as Ralph pointed out in his book, it is not a good thing when it hinders the spread of the gospel. We don't belong to the church of the pro-life. We belong to the church of Jesus Christ. And this is not to say that we shouldn't fight abortion as much as we can and use our votes to do so and support candidates that are against it and so on. But let me tell you, while men have sinful hearts, there will always be abortion. There will always be drunkenness. There will always be murder of every kind. Do you know that John Calvin talked about the sin of abortion in his day? Think about that. In the 1500s. This is nothing new. And it will continue to take place. I don't care how many votes are taken in Texas or elsewhere. There's too many people who want to do this. But saving the unborn is not a higher objective than saving souls. And yoking with Roman Catholics and pro-life ministry is doing evil that good may come. Here's how Pastor Ovidal put it. Quote, "The good that they do is to preach and work against abortion. The evil that they do is to yoke together with Roman Catholics under the banner of the Lord Jesus Christ, seeking to present all of them as Christians standing in the cause." One notable evangelical who has compromised to such a degree that he has Frank Pavone from Priests for Life involved in his Focus on the Family Institute is Dr. James Dobson. He has a one semester program, and Frank Pavone, who calls himself Father Frank Pavone, is involved in that institute. Dobson also hosts Pavone's writings on his Focus on the Family website. It's no surprise then that Dr. Dobson and Chuck Colson both met with the Pope and a bevy of Roman Catholic dignitaries at Rome during a three-day conference in recent years. Roman Catholic pro-life leaders such as priest Frank Pavone are very quick to rejoice in the benefits that pro-life cooperation with Protestants has brought to their church. Listen to this statement by a Joe Scheidler at a pro-life conference in Toronto about 20 years ago. He said this, quote, "There is a new ecumenism that's being brought about by this movement. It has brought a lot of converts to the Catholic Church too. A great number of pro-lifers have started out in another faith and have come over to the church and brought a lot of people into the churches." There is a lady who now travels the country who also appears regularly on the Roman Catholic television station EWTN. She formerly worked for Planned Parenthood and became so nauseated and sickened by what was taking place there that she quit her job and has been a crusader against abortion ever since. You might say, well, that's a wonderful thing for her to do, Abby Johnson. But Abby Johnson is now being used by the Roman Catholic Church as a missionary for the church. As I say, she appears all the time on a station which is nothing but an indoctrination session for Romanism called EWTN. If you've ever had the foolish notion to watch it, you'll see what I'm talking about. There, very sadly, have been some who have, and still do, place the lives of the unborn ahead of Christ and his gospel in their list of priorities. And yes, I am against abortion. Of course I am, as the Lord is. But I don't believe in destroying the souls of men and women in order to try to save the lives of the unborn. Many years ago, Dr. Allison, the late Dr. Allison, was involved in anti-abortion ministry in Greenville, South Carolina. He came to the conclusion that working alongside Romanists was injurious to the gospel. He didn't stop crusading against abortion, but he stopped doing it in a public way, along with those who were standing praying the rosary and crying out with their Madonnas in hand. And at many pro-life and anti-abortion events, there are people praying together. Roman Catholics among them praying the rosary. It's very common. And if you ever look up what the rosary is, you can do that on the internet. You'll see just what a blasphemous thing it is. But as far as this ecumenical evangelism is concerned, I want to think as well of the disastrous implications of such activity. We read here about Jehoshaphat and what he did in joining affinity with Ahab, a false religionist and an evil man. And of course they were joined together in a political action. But nonetheless, here's what the Lord said. He sent the prophet Jehu to meet him, 2 Chronicles 19 verse 2, and said to King Jehoshaphat, "Shouldest thou help the ungodly and love them that hate the Lord? Therefore is wrath upon me from before the Lord." And if you look into it, you'll find that later on in Jehoshaphat's own family, he paid a price for his compromise, because his son got himself involved as well with idolaters, and it resulted in great tragedy, in ships being destroyed and so on. David Cloud made this comment about ecumenism. Quote, "Ecumenical relationships between evangelicals and Catholics is a matter that pertains to the gospel. This is not a minor issue. Rome preaches a sacramental gospel that is cursed of God and that leads people to hell. The Council of Trent, reaffirmed by Vatican II, proclaimed, 'If anyone shall say that justifying faith is nothing else than confidence in the divine mercy, pardoning sins for Christ's sake, or that it is that confidence alone by which we are justified, let him be accursed.' Rome is thus an avowed enemy of the New Testament faith. Those who fellowship with Romanism put a stamp of approval, unwittingly perhaps, but just as surely, upon the false gospel preached by their Roman Catholic friends. When Billy Graham included Catholics in his evangelistic crusades and sent inquirers to Catholic churches, those looking on were made to think that Roman Catholicism must be true Christianity. When evangelical leaders fellowship with Rome, a climate is created whereby it is very difficult to preach that Catholics need to be saved and leave their false church." And again, Ralph Ovidal could testify to that. When you're in prison beside people who have suffered, just like you, from the hands of the authorities for opposing abortion, it's really hard to start telling them that they need to be saved. Ecumenical evangelicals break down the walls between truth and error, and they muddy the waters of gospel work. Ecumenical relationships are an exceedingly serious matter with eternally destructive consequences, unquote. And friends, it's true, ecumenical evangelism and co-belligerence acting together in a cause has resulted in many being won over to the blasphemous errors of Romanism. I've mentioned Billy Graham. And for those who try to say, well, that's an old issue, that's really not up to date, let me just pass on a very sad story of compromise and spiritual disaster that has implications to the very present day. In September 1989, Billy Graham held a crusade in Little Rock, Arkansas. It was supported by the usual mixed bag of Southern Baptists, Charismatics, and Liberals. At the time, reports were given such as this, quote, "The Roman Catholic Archbishop is fully cooperating, training personal workers, and expects at least 600 referrals to the Catholic Church." I did not bring these excerpts with me, but I have on my computer at home excerpts from a Roman Catholic newspaper of the time. It's called the Arkansas Catholic. There are two separate reports, one prior to Graham's campaign and the other following the crusade. And it is amazing to read of the full involvement of Roman Catholic priests and the Archbishop in the planning and in the carrying out of that crusade. Dr. Stephen Lawson, who is a prominent Baptist preacher today from the Southern Baptists, but a man who does preach the word, became involved with the Billy Graham Crusades at that time, 1989, because he had a church in Little Rock, a Bible church. He wrote a very fawning tribute in a blog after Billy Graham's passing at the beginning of 2018. In that blog, he made no reference whatsoever to Graham's compromise with Romanism or to Graham's practice of referring converts from Roman Catholic backgrounds back into that church. I wonder why. Well, I found out why. Because in his article, it's still available on the internet, by the way, it's up there today on the Cripplegate. It's called Three Lessons from the Extraordinary Life of Billy Graham. Dr. Stephen Lawson states the following, quote, "In 1989, I was pastoring the Bible Church of Little Rock when our city hosted a week-long Billy Graham crusade. The call went out for local pastors to participate as volunteers, and I was asked to be the chairman of counseling and follow-up." Did you get that? The chairman of counseling and follow-up. "In this role," Lawson says, "I oversaw the training of 3,000 counselors and then was responsible for the follow-up after the crusade for those who committed their lives to Christ. I have the evidence that among those counselors were hundreds who were Roman Catholics and that there were hundreds who went back to the Catholic Church who were counseled in the follow-up, overseen by Dr. Lawson." He goes on, "So began my partnership with the Billy Graham organization. At their next American crusade in New York City, they asked if I would do there what I did in Little Rock. They flew me there to speak to 800 pastors and church leaders and help them understand the critical components of evangelism in the local church. I trained them on how to earnestly share the gospel, how to answer objections, and how to urge a person to follow Christ." And then get this. "For the next 10 years, I did this at every Billy Graham crusade in North America." Okay? So, timeline, 1989, 10 years, every crusade in North America. And friends, as I looked into it, I thought, no wonder Stephen Lawson makes no reference to the decades-long practice of cooperation with Romanists by Billy Graham. Because Lawson himself, by his own admission, organize every Billy Graham crusade in North America for 10 years after the 1989 Little Rock event. Now, I don't have time to detail all the terrible Romanizing of Graham during that period. But since Mr. Lawson referenced the New York City Crusade of 1990, I'll refer to that here. Listen to this. In April 1990, Graham held his crusade in Albany, New York. The following is a description which appeared in a Catholic publication. Quote, about 20,000 persons are busy making ready for Billy Graham's 1990 Capital District Crusade, including representatives from 18 Protestant denominations in the area and a delegation of top Catholic officials appointed by Bishop Howard J. Hubbard. The Graham Crusade, scheduled for April 22nd through 29th at the Knickerbocker Arena in Albany, comes in response to a request made by Bishop Hubbard and other religious leaders who 3 years ago formally invited the world-renowned evangelist to preach here. There are 9 Catholics on the 50-person or the 20-person executive committee set up to direct the crusade. Diocesan officials view the Graham Crusade as a tool for evangelization. By the way, that's a buzzword within Catholicism. They don't believe in evangelism. They call it evangelization. Basically what it is, if you're a Roman Catholic and you come to a meeting like Billy Graham's meetings and you're a lapsed Catholic, you haven't been going to Mass, you haven't been going to confession, basically you haven't really been practicing Catholicism, this is your opportunity to renew your commitment to the Church. So you come out at a Graham Crusade meeting and you get your little package away with you and you recommit yourself to the Roman Catholic Church and you go back to your Roman Church sent there by the Billy Graham organization. Diocesan officials view the Graham Crusade as a tool for evangelization, explained an executive committee member, Reverend James Kane, director of the Diocesan Ecumenical Commission. As for the specific dogmatic content of Mr. Graham's sermons, Father, quote, Kane said, there is nothing that the Catholics should feel uncomfortable with or be leery of. He said that the evangelist's emphasis on the gospel and on the importance of the individual's personal relationship with Christ is consistent with Catholic teaching. However, he added, we would of course emphasize the importance of the Eucharist and the Mass, the sacraments, and the importance of the structure and organization of the Church and its bishops and the Pope. Of course, they're just matters of later tradition that Billy didn't want to worry too much about. Let's come a little closer to home. In June 1992, same period when Mr. Lawson was overseeing the Crusades, June 1992, in Philadelphia, regarding the Graham Crusade, Cardinal Anthony J. Bivalacqua, the Archbishop of Philadelphia, sent out a letter with the following comments, quote, as Catholics, in union with our Holy Father the Pope, we are completely committed to our Church's ecumenical work. The Archdiocese has developed an understanding with the Greater Philadelphia Billy Graham Crusade, June 24 through 28, that is fully in accord with Catholic ecumenical principles, unquote. Now you know about the Philadelphia Inquirer, another one of those lying left-wing newspapers. But anyway, according to the Philadelphia Inquirer, the Archdiocese sent 40 trained counselors for the crusade. After each crusade session, Catholics coming forward were linked up with Catholic counselors and referred to the Catholic Church. In the same year, September 1992, Graham was scheduled to hold a crusade in Portland, Oregon. What a wonderful place to have a crusade. According to Christians Evangelizing Catholics, 10,000 counselors were expected to attend classes, and Roman Catholic churches set a goal to supply 6,000 of these. Out of 10,000 counselors, 6,000 of them from the Roman Church. Those who respond to the altar call, they said, will be directed to Catholic parishes. This is from the Catholic Sentinel of April 24, 1992, that was cited in Christians Evangelizing Catholics in June 1992. And I should mention just one other crusade on Dr. Lawson's watch. Some of you may have heard of Wilson Ewan. He did a great work for the Lord. In his prayer letter for July 6, 1992, he reported this regarding Graham's June 1990 crusade in Catholic Quebec in Canada. Rick Marshall, the mission director and a member of the Minneapolis-based staff, said in an interview, quote, this is from the Billy Graham organization, "It is being made clear to all staff and volunteers there is to be no proselytizing." In other words, there's to be no trying to get Roman Catholics to leave the Roman Catholic Church. You're not to evangelize Roman Catholics. There is to be no proselytizing. Jesuit priest Charles Delea said, quote, "It is interesting to note that there is no follow-up on Roman Catholics." And that's a Catholic looking at Billy Graham, page 47. Now listen, who could ever quantify the eternal consequences of such behavior? I don't say any of this just to try to be a smart aleck and throw Dr. Stephen Lawson under the bus. But these are questions that men need to answer in the present day that have never, to my knowledge, been answered. Now, Dr. Lawson has come out, and according to my research, in a video in 2017, and in that video, he said that he used to be a believer in ecumenicalism, which there is no such thing as ecumenism, but anyway. He said he was involved in ecumenicalism, but he no longer is. But no explanation. Didn't say I was involved with Billy Graham. I sent thousands back into the Roman Catholic Church. No, there's never been any word of that. And why? Because later on, in 2018, he wrote a fawning piece on Billy Graham in which he eulogized the man and made no reference to sending people back into the Church of Rome. And even recently, Dr. Lawson has been tweeting, urging people to listen to certain clips of Billy Graham's preaching. So he has not repented of his association with Billy Graham. And that's a problem for me. That's a big problem for me, and it should be a problem for him. Now, you and I know that in this country, for certain offences, there is a statute of limitations. You know what that is? If someone did something, for example, to some child many, many decades ago, because of the passage of time, depending on the circumstances, courts might refuse to prosecute the guilty one because of what's called a statute of limitations. In other words, the person didn't come forward with their accusations soon enough, and so it's off the slate. But can I just tell you, there is no such statute in God's court. God doesn't operate with a statute of limitations. If you've committed a sin, a public sin, 40 years ago, you still haven't cleaned that mess up. You have to clean that mess up publicly. And that's what I would certainly encourage and exhort Dr. Stephen Lawson to do. Now, I'm just a peon as far as he's concerned, no doubt. I may not really matter. That's fine. I'm just a small voice in the wilderness. But I'm telling you right now, folks, when that kind of thing goes on, it has to be faced honestly. And a man must understand that if he doesn't deal with that issue, it remains and becomes ever more a dark blot on his ministry. And that's why I can't support the ministry of Dr. Lawson in any circumstances. Can you imagine deliberately pushing multitudes of poor seeking souls into the arms of spiritual wolves? Not just in Romanist churches, but in liberal churches. That New York crusade had over 18 Protestant denominations. They will include denominations that don't preach the gospel. Undoubtedly. I wouldn't send anybody to a church like that. Do you think I would send somebody to the United Methodist Church down the road that believes in supporting sodomy and having sodomites in membership of the church and as ministers in the church and so on? To say that there are disastrous implications in this ecumenical activity would be a huge understatement. But of course, there is this other area that we've mentioned that I must again briefly touch on, in which joining hands with Romanists, infidels and charismatics has huge negative implications and results, and it is the pro-life movement. I'm going to read you a story. A story that was given to me by Mr. Ovidal, our pastor friend in Wisconsin. This account was written by a former Baptist minister who was involved in pro-life ministries. Listen to this carefully. He says, "Miss Norma and I first met on opposite sides of an issue that has divided the nation for over 43 years, an issue made synonymous to her very public name, Jane Roe, of the Roe versus Wade decision in 1973. So Miss Norma is Jane Roe of that landmark case. Here's what he says. "I would stand praying the rosary as a Baptist pastor on the sidewalks while she called the police from inside a Choice for Women, a local abortion clinic in Dallas, Texas. At the time, I was a young Baptist pastor, son of two parents, the grandson of two sets of grandparents, all still married to each other, and pastored churches full of white folks who also were kids from the same set of parents and grandparents, and all very involved with extended families. Quite new to the abortion issue when Planned Parenthood announced in 1992 they were bringing an abortion clinic to my happy little Baptist town of Waco, Texas. Later, when Operation Rescue came to Waco to focus attention on the new facility in 1994, they opened my eyes to a broader need to be part of the church in the streets. And I find myself traveling to Dallas as often as I could to join them in front of the 13 abortion facilities in Dallas at that time, and to stand with the Bishop of Dallas one Saturday per month for a public rosary for life. I will always hold dear the transformation in Miss Norma and her friend Miss Connie. Her conversion to Christianity in July 1995, being invited to offer the baptismal prayer at her baptism, and our journey together into the Roman Catholic Church. My family and I on August 15, 1998 in Dallas, and Miss Norma, that's Jane Roe, 2 days later, August 17th in Dallas. I hold such fond memories of her bombshell announcement of desiring to complete her journey of faith and come home to the Holy Roman Catholic Church from my pulpit in Waco, Texas, where she proclaimed Waco her Bethlehem and caused my church board to wonder if I would not be happier as a Catholic, thus making Miss Norma the instrument of me losing my favorite job ever, giggles. Over the years, as our friendship developed, and especially after she moved back to Dallas, I had the privilege of taking her to Sunday lunch every Sunday for 3 years. We often found ourselves giggling over the thankfully not very well-read book, More Than These, A Call to Reformation, written by Ralph Ovidal. Sorry, I cannot bring myself to call him pastor. Who, in his 270 pages, calling evangelicals to abandon the pro-life movement because it was a secret weapon of the Vatican to pull evangelicals away from Christ and into the Catholic Church, and his proclamation that Miss Norma and I would go to hell for becoming Catholic, giggles good times. What a sad record of the disastrous consequences of joining hands, even in a good cause, with those who reject the true gospel of Jesus Christ. Now, near the beginning of my sermon this morning, I quoted one Reverend Donald Gillies, a Presbyterian minister in Belfast, Northern Ireland. He wrote an expose of the World Council of Churches called Unity in the Dark, very good little book. But he concluded his book in this way, quote, "Ecumenism is the enemy of the gospel of regeneration by the Spirit and justification by faith alone. Let evangelical Protestantism be faithful even unto death, rather than enter into an allegiance with the idolatry of orthodoxy and Romanism and the unbelief of liberalism. The truth which promotes the glory of God must not be sacrificed for a unity which is primarily concerned for the good of man. Let Jesus Christ be praised, though man and the world should perish. Let his gospel be preached, for it is the power of God unto salvation to everyone that believeth, the just shall live by faith. Stand fast therefore in the liberty wherewith Christ hath made us free, and be not entangled again with the yoke of bondage, unquote. Great words. But isn't it a greater pity that the Reverend Donald Gillies did not stand by those words? Donald Gillies continued to be a minister inside the Presbyterian Church in Ireland, mixing with liberals, with compromisers, with Bible deniers. And before he finished his ministry, he had a Roman Catholic priest in his pulpit. The very things that he wrote about in the book, Unity in the Dark, he was practicing before his death. That gives me chills. This is the fruit of compromise. This is the outcome of ecumenism. My Bible says, let him that thinketh he standeth take heed lest he fall. To quote Dr. Ashbrook from earlier again, compromise always takes a man further than he wants to go. And we need to understand that God Almighty does not stand by idly and watch his truth being trampled in the streets or underfoot. The Bible says, buy the truth and sell it not. And as old covenanter Samuel Rutherford said, I dare not give away one hair's breadth of God's truth, for it is not mine to give, but God's. May God help us to stand for the truth against all who would oppose it, against all who would seek to destroy it, or to mire it under a heap of superstitious bondage. There is no cause, men and women, there is no cause greater than that of the gospel of Jesus Christ. So let us be set for the defense of that gospel. I am not ashamed of the gospel of Christ, for it is the power of God unto salvation to everyone that believeth, to the Jew first, and also to the Greek. May we all be able to read our personal title clear to a mansion in glory.